Flute with Henry Morgan. A Flute with Henry Morgan is an original story written for radio by Warren Barry and a George Edwards production. History contains stories of colorful people, rogues, heroes, kings, and commoners. But there were few who had such a picturesque, blood-stained career culminating in honored glory as a man named Morgan in the 17th century. Henry Morgan, pirate, whose foul deeds earned him the name of Colossus of the Caribbean, eventually became Sir Henry Morgan, King's representative, governor of Jamaica. In the Caribbean Sea, the sun at day's end dips like a blazing ball into the ocean, throwing over the sea a dancing pink mantle, and over the islands a soft pink glow that blends in with the cool white buildings which stand invitingly midst waving fronds and green foliage. Thus, the spirit of night gives warning of her coming over the British island of Jamaica and the Spanish possession of Cuba. But in Havana, capital of Cuba, inside a large white Moorish type of home, the serenity of the evening is gone. Beside a highly polished cedar desk, white and shaking with rage, stands Don Pietro Pizarro, Spanish governor of Cuba. Before him, hesitant, full of apologies, stands a seaman of high rank.
And after losing a ship, you have the effrontery to return here to Havana and face me.
I have tried to explain, Don Pietro. It was no fault of mine.
No fault of yours that you let a ship laden down with treasure, and part of it my own treasure, be taken by that pirate Henry Morgan.
It was the will of heaven. Before I left, Excellency, did I not go on my knees and pray that you would let me put more armor on my ships? I had escorts. They were to protect me.
And like the blundering fool you are, you get separated from them and allowed yourself to fall prey, defenseless, to Henry Morgan.
You fail to understand, Don Pietro. You yourself know the nights in the Caribbean are dark when there is no moon. Suddenly, as if from nowhere, a storm arises. We hurry to bring in our canvases to make our ship secure. And before we know what has happened, we are scattered to the winds. And then comes the morning. The storm is gone. And in the blaze of glory, the night changes to gray, then flaming red. And a ship is standing nearby. At first sight, I give thanks to heaven that I still have one of my escorts to protect me. And then breaks the flag. And I know I am victim to Henry Morgan.
Henry Morgan, Henry Morgan, Henry Morgan. Is there no one in the world who will rid us of him? Must we always fear the man, Henry Morgan? And those aboard the ship, what of them?
Taken by Henry Morgan to Jamaica to be sold as slaves.
Then you are lucky, Curtis.
My luck depends on your clemency, Excellency.
Oh, perhaps it was partly my fault for not allowing you extra armor to defend yourself. But Cortez witnessed this much. I say to you, I pray to heaven for one grant, one gracious gift, to see Henry Morgan in chains in Havana, to have him in the hands of the Inquisition, to see his broken body hanging by the neck in the slave market. That is what I wish from heaven. And with heaven's aid, I will have my wish.
Don Pietro's voice shakes with emotion as he sends his prayers heavenwards. And then, with a curt nod, Cortez is dismissed. The governor watches him go, and the heavy cedar doors close on him. But already, Cortez has gone from Don Pietro's mind. There is something else to be faced. The wrath of someone he fears when she is in anger. The loss of his own personal treasure is cause for grave concern, yet the thought of the coming meeting gives him far greater worry. Like a man who realizes it is no good postponing trouble, he lets himself out through a small door into a cool and biting courtyard. Wisteria vines climb and twist themselves around arches. The mauve blossoms hang in their grape-like bunches. The scent of the flowers mingles with the perfume waters of the fountain, which plays to cool the hot breath of coming night. The atmosphere of the courtyard is languid peace. But all the beauty and peace is lost on Don Pietro as his steps echo on the marble pavement. His eyes are on the figure sitting on the stone seat looking at the well-fed goldfish in the fountain pond. And the closer he gets, the greater his trepidation.
How to tell her? Heaven help me. How to tell her?
The girl by the fish pond looks up. The falling dusk gives her an added beauty, emphasizing the whiteness of her skin. The softness of her arms and shoulders gives luster to her raven hair, and jet-black eyes gives a deeper hue to her passionate red manner. A frown crosses her forehead. A new light enters her eyes.
Something has gone wrong. I know that expression of his. He doesn't know how to tell me.
She waits until he comes up close. And as he fidgets with the cravat of his neck, then with a curl of his wig, she sits waiting for him to speak first. Then can bear his agitation no longer.
Well, Father, something is worrying you. I know. Tell me what it is.
Dolores, I do not know how to tell you. But remember, please, do not lose your temper. I have had bad news. I could not stand to see it.
What is it? What has gone wrong now?
Cortez has just left me.
Cortez? How can he be in Cuba? He is captain of the treasure ship on his way to Spain.
He was the captain, but he fell into the hands of Henry Morgan.
The English pirate. He took the treasure, our treasure.
Dolores, please do not lose your temper. I cannot stand it. Yes, a storm scattered the Spanish ships. Morgan took Cote's ship with the greatest of ease.
Our treasure gone. That doesn't matter so much. We can get more gold from the mainland. But don't you realize the Aztec necklace was on that ship? My necklace, worth more than money can tell.
Dolores, please. I will make it up to you. I will obtain for yourself a whole shipload of gold.
Gold? I don't want the gold. It is the Aztec necklace I want, and I shall have it back. I shall get it. I swear by heaven that no fat English senora will wear the Aztec necklace which belongs to Dolores Pizarro.
So two oaths are taken on this balmy tropical night, and because of them, our tale is spun. The spirit of night encloses the Caribbean in a cloak of black, spangled with large dancing stars. And as she speeds across the sky, the edge of her cloak lifts in the east, showing a gray promise of a new day, which warns the sun it is time for work. Like a man disturbed from a heavy sleep, he climbs into the heavens, angry and red, casting vengeful rays over the ocean, reaching out to alight on the topmost peak of a sail, and down the snow-white canvas, until they embrace the hull, making the ship as though of gold. Early as it is, the ship is alive with movement, for land is ahead. On the poop, with one hand resting on the rail, stands Captain Henry Morgan, thick-set, handsome, burly. Beside him, kneeling at an open chest, is a swarthy young man, handsome in a sinister, sly way. His dark eyes are alight with greed as he looks into the open chest. His tongue slowly moistens his lips as he looks upon the treasure.
I take your fill, the arts. That's your payment for your treachery to your countrymen.
You are generous, Captain Morgan, in giving me this loot as my share.
You served me well. I reward well those who serve.
Diamonds, rubies, gold pieces. It will make my stay in Port Royal a happy one, Captain.
You'll be a welcome visitor in the Dolphin Tavern. Kitty the Buccaneers, Bella will be glad to see you, laden down with that loot. There'll be necklaces to hang around her nice neck.
Ah, Captain Morgan, and look at this one. I shall hang it around her neck.
My son, David, hand it to me.
No, it's mine.
Give it here. Aye, it is beautiful. Gold so finely beaten it looks like lace. Emeralds and rubies of the finest quality. It's too fine a thing to have scum like you waste upon a wanton's neck. It'll be better in my own pocket, it will.
You'll give it back to me. It is mine. You gave me this chest and all that in it. Give me my necklace back.
What's this, you renegade Spanish rat? Insubordination? You're sailing under Henry Morgan, and Henry Morgan takes what he wants.
But that necklace, it is mine. Give it to me.
I'll give you this, you Spanish dog, in exchange. Now, get ye about your business. The wind is falling. We'll not make Port Royal by tonight. See that every strip of canvas is spread to catch the failing wind.
Henry Morgan's fear of the failing wind proves correct. Soon it dies away until it is just a faint whisper. The sun beats down on the boiling sea and the gallant ship barely moves towards that smudge in the horizon, which is Jamaica. The tantalizing nearness of the land and the baking sun makes tempers edgy and crafty minds. signs treacherous.
Listen to me, you two men. Morgan gives us the crumbs and keeps everything for himself.
And two pairs of shifty eyes look on Beatz as he talks.
Enough loot was taken on the trip to keep us in luxury for the rest of our lives. But Morgan seeks to keep it all.
Two heads nod in agreement, and so a plot is born.
We won't reach Port Royal until late tonight. Morgan will leave the ship to visit the governor. Why not you two wait for him? A quick dagger thrust in the neck, and we all share his shipload of gold.
Greed makes the other two fall in with the plan and blinds their eyes to the fact that they do it while Diaz has no hand in it. Diaz is right. It is late when Port Royal is reached and the town is wrapped in darkness. Before long, Captain Henry Morgan leaves the ship and goes along the dirty laneways near the docks. Figures lurk suspiciously in darkened doorways. Filth litters the ground at his feet. Two pairs of eyes watch out from under an archway, see him come closer and then spring forward. The summons to the attack throws Morgan to the ground, a knife.
You scum! You seek to take my life, do you?
As if from nowhere, a third figure lurches into the fray. A second knife flashes once, twice, and two figures lie dead amongst the filth. Morgan has helped to his feet.
I thank you. You saved my life.
I never did like two against one.
Who is it I have to thank?
I know you not. You know me not. It isn't wise in Jamaica to ask questions of a stranger. I have done you a favor this night. Now do me one. Seek not to question who I am.
A strange meeting on a dark night. The beginning of an adventure tale. Don't miss the next exciting episode of Afloat with Henry Morgan.
RadioTimeZone.com.
With Henry Morgan. During the 17th century, Henry Morgan struck terror into the hearts of the Spaniards. Not a ship of Spain was safe from Morgan's buccaneers. When our story opens, a Spanish ship had just been taken. Tragic news for Don Pietro Pizarro, governor of Cuba, because part of his personal treasure, including the fabulous and priceless Aztec necklet, was amongst the cargo. Pizarro swore that Morgan would be captured, and his daughter Dolores swore to get the necklet back. The renegade Spaniard Diaz, a member of Morgan's crew, also coveted the necklet, and upon reaching Port Royal, incited two members of the crew to murder Morgan. That night, in a dark alley, they sprang upon the unsuspecting man, but Morgan was saved by a stranger who was unwilling to tell him anything about himself.
Come, man. That's a surly answer to give to anyone whose life you've just saved.
I have my reasons. Jamaica's a strange place, friend. It's best not to ask too many questions of strangers here. Many are the reasons why men are on this accursed island.
I can think of many, but you tell me some.
Some are here because they're sent. Bonded servants, I think they're called. The term slave applies better. Sent here to rot in the marshes of the island or sweat their hearts out on the cane fields. Others come to forget. So, friend, I think it's best we part.
Look you, I like the sound of your voice. Strange to meet a man of education in this part of Port Royal. I'd like to see your face in the light.
I'm a man who likes the dark.
I'll ask of you one request. Let me see if I can identify my would-be assassins in the dark.
Gladly.
So that's what it is, isn't it? Two members of my own crew. And why should they seek to kill me? My friend, the greed of man. It seems there are none about me I can trust.
Such is the way of the world.
Could I trust you, friend?
We have agreed to part.
I don't need to look far to know the reason of this attack tonight. And I know who was responsible for it, but I can't prove it. I'm looking for a man I can trust implicitly. Come with me. I'd like to talk with you, friend.
No.
If it's the light you're frightened of, I'll be taking you to a place in which everyone present fears the light. You'll be quite safe there.
Where is this place?
Heard ye of the Dolphin Tavern?
No.
Then you're a stranger in these parts.
What manner of place is it?
Now, my friend, I'll show you that I will. It's but a short walking distance from here.
The Dolphin Tavern. Den of iniquity, sin, and vice. Rendezvous and hideout for buccaneer and pirate, and all of it ruled over by Kitty, the buccaneer's belle. Kitty, whose fame had spread into every corner, every lair, every swamp and creek where pirates gathered, from the Keys of Florida to the most remote and unknown island of the Caribbean. For a smile from Kitty, men would steal from their shipmates. For a kiss, they would kill. Every night from dusk to dawn, Kitty serves the drinks and gives her favors. Her light Irish brogue and her cascading laughter sounding strange amongst the coarse oaths and harsh voices of the scum gathered from every part of the world. Deftly she moves amongst them, skillfully eluding the attentions of an unwelcome arm, sometimes seeing a familiar face which has been absent for some time.
Well, if it's not Patch Icy. Well, you're back again in Port Royal, and they haven't hanged you yet from the yardarm. Oh, it is right glad I am to see you. There.
The welcome is planted on a hungry mouth. Then, with agility born of practice, Kitty is out of the place and laughingly on her way. The air hangs heavy in the Dolphin Tavern with stale tobacco smoke, smoking lamps and spilled liquor. The faces are vague in the haze and half-light. And as Kitty goes towards a room at the back of the tap room, a curtain of an alcove quickly parts and her wrist is caught in the hand of steel. Almost roughly, she is pulled into the alcove. The curtains fall into place, and Kitty looks into a pair of black, burning eyes.
So, you didn't expect me back tonight, eh?
Why, dear, I didn't see you come into the tavern.
No, that is true, but I come here. I watch you. I see you giving your kisses away. Someday I come back and I strangle you.
All right, glad I am to see you, dear.
Do not lie to me. I saw the way you behaved in the tavern. You do not care whether Diaki come or he does not come back. And tonight, I come to tell you that perhaps before long I'll be able to buy your freedom.
Oh, you buy my freedom? And since when has a member of a pirate's crew had enough money to be able to pay the sum which would buy Kitty her freedom? You know full well I'm a bonded servant sent from England, practically a slave. And you know the price my master, Bow-legged Johnson, would ask for my freedom. Seeing that I'm responsible for the great success of this tavern.
I know that. Perhaps tonight I will have the money which you want. Perhaps tomorrow I hang about your lovely white neck rubies, and in your ears I place the finest pearls, on your fingers the heaviest of rubies, bracelets of gold around your wrists. And then you'll be my own woman, eh? I give you a big fine house, plenty of servants, carriages, houses, eh? Then you'll be mine, eh?
You can do all that for me? Please, man, tell me how.
No. That is my secret. The other men, they would like to do it for you. But me, Diaz, I am the man with brains. I will do it. Tomorrow morning, you'll see, I come. I buy your freedom. I take you away, and you'll be mine.
Pearls in the ears, fine dresses, a horse, a carriage of my own, rubies and emeralds around the neck. You would do this for me?
I will do anything for you. To take you away from here. To know that you are safe from others.
Oh, no. No kiss for you until I see your precious money and the jewels in your hand.
If they come back here.
Dears, you had best return to the tap room. Your lord and master has come in. It's Captain Henry Morgan himself.
Morgan? Yeah. No. No, it is impossible.
Why? Who is it he has with him? He's one I've never seen before. Look at him. Oh, it is so fair. He is so fair. His eyes must be blue and tall and broad of shoulder. Who is he?
I do not know. I've never seen him before. What is he doing with Captain Henry?
Well, perhaps you'd best go and see.
Diaz hardly hears what Kitty says. His face has gone sallow. His heart is pounding in his breast. His plot has gone wrong. Nagging fear is at the back of his brain. Through the smoky haze, he watches Morgan and his companion weave their way to an empty table. Morgan's companion looks at him closely, his bright steel blue eyes alight with recognition. And quietly, he appraises his new friend with fresh interest. Both sit at the table, eyeing each other closely for the first time.
I might have been ignorant as to what the Dolphin Tavern was, but I'm not ignorant of the name Morgan.
In these parts, you'd be a strange man if you were.
So you're Henry Morgan. Why did you bring me to this place?
I wanted to see if you're the type of man that your voice told me you were.
And am I?
I have a shipload of cutthroats. Amongst them, my word is law. And yet there's not one of them I can trust. Tonight, two of them tried to kill me. You know why?
How should I know?
For the sake of this bauble.
Are you mad, man, showing this priceless necklet in a place such as this? Look how those around you are gazing upon it. Put it away, man.
There's not a person here, man, enough to try and take it from me. Yes, they're watching it greedily, covetously. But they haven't got the courage to come and take it. There's only one man on this tavern who's not looking at it with greed and desire. And that's the man I feel I can trust.
Who is he?
You. That's why I brought the bauble out. I suppose you know what it's worth.
Taken from an Aztec temple. Finest bit of goldsmith work I've ever seen. Delicate. Like lace. Set with the purest gems. Yes, I know its value. You couldn't buy it with money.
Then you are the man to be trusted. I care not for your past. I'm only interested in your future. Would you like to sail with me, young man? You can't remain hidden on this island, you know.
My hand on it, Captain Morgan. I'll sail under you.
Oh, and it's Captain Morgan. Oh, it's not often, Captain Morgan, that you honor us with your presence at the Dolphin Tavern.
Look, you, I'd come more often if I could be sure of getting service from your fair
hand. Oh, it's a flattery of thee, Captain Harry. But your friend's a newcomer. I have not seen you here before, sir. What be thee called?
The unexpected sight of Kitty had momentarily bereft him of his senses. And as he gave his name, he could have bitten out his tongue. He had resolved never to use it again, but the damage was done. Amongst this filth, squalor, curses, and cutthroat band, Kitty seemed like an oasis in a dry and thirsty desert. Spellbound, he feasted his eyes upon her, drinking in her coppery hair, spun like a golden halo around her head, the grayness of her eyes which gave promise of hidden fires, the warmth of her generous mouth, the whiteness of her skin, and the soft roundness of her shoulder where her blouse pulled down. Oblivious of the stares around them, he let her hold him in her gaze, let himself read the invitation in her eyes.
Why, sure, Captain Morgan. Your friend has got the bad manners. He stares at a lady.
I'm sorry. I didn't expect to see someone like you here.
I was showing my friend this pretty bauble, Kitty. You like it?
Oh, it is wonderful. Can I hold it to my neck?
Certainly.
Maybe I could fasten it round the neck. Or maybe your friend would do it for me. Hold on to, man. If you won't do it, there's plenty here who will.
No, Kitty. Holding it to your neck is one thing. Fastening it on is another.
Oh, I would so like to have it. Oh, it is the loveliest thing I've ever seen. A woman would do anything for a thing like that, Captain Morgan.
Mayhap. But this necklace is to be put to other purposes. Thank you for it, Kitty.
Oh, I hate to give it back.
Thank you. Now, Mr. Hunter, I think our business here is complete.
Will you come back, Mr. Hunter, and see us some other time?
I don't know. That depends.
Come, Hunter. Time I was off. Good night, Kitty.
Good night, Captain Morgan. Good night, Mr. Hunter.
Good night.
So, you think to ensnare another man, do you, your little cheat?
Keep your hands off me, dears. I've had enough of your pawing for tonight. Did you see the necklace Captain Morgan had?
I know it well.
I'd do anything to have that necklace for my very own. Yes. Do you love me?
That you know too well.
Then get that necklace for me. Let that be the proof of your love. Get that necklace for me, and I'll be yours and yours only.
A necklace fashioned centuries before by hands long dead, changes the destinies of these people. Listen for the next episode of A Flute with Henry Morgan.
RadioTimeZone.com.
Afloat with Henry Morgan. The notorious buccaneer Henry Morgan captures the Spanish ship. This is tragic news for the Spanish governor of Cuba, Don Pietro Pizarro, because the ship contains some of his own personal treasure, including a fabulous Aztec necklace. Diaz, the renegade Spanish member of Morgan's crew, covets the necklace to give to Kitty, the serving wench at the Dolphin Tavern in Port Royal. He incites two members of the crew to kill Morgan. Morgan is saved by a stranger, and they go to the Dolphin Tavern. Kitty is taken by this man, who says his name is Jeffrey Hunter. But she is more taken by the necklet, which is shown to her by Morgan. And after they leave, she tells Dietz that she'll be his woman if he gets for her the Aztec necklace.
And I mean it, Dietz. Get me that necklet and I'll be yours.
Dare not, Kitty. That is something I have dreamed of doing. The moment I set my eyes on it, I could see it lying around your white neck. In my mind, I could see it fastening it there.
Tonight you did boast loud and long as to how you could buy my freedom to make me yours. You don't need to buy it now. Just give me the necklace as proof of your love.
Oh, you give a man a hard task. It isn't easy to take anything from Captain Morgan when he decides it for himself.
Then mayhap if I'm nice to Captain Morgan, he will give it to me of his own accord.
Why, you want
it? No, I just fancy that necklace. Remember, dear, there are plenty here in this tavern this very night who would willingly get it for me at the price I'm offering.
Someday you will drive me to a stake when I will kill you. A woman can make a man jealous only so far, and then after that it's dangerous by a woman.
Or mayhap the tall, handsome stranger who is with Captain Henry could get it for me.
You would drive me crazy. What was it Morgan was talking to the man about? Who is he?
Oh, how do I know? Would you like to know more about the handsome stranger?
I distrust this sudden friendship.
Mayhap I could find out from the man all about himself.
You'll leave him alone, or by heaven I'll kill you.
You get the necklace for me, and then you'll have no need to be jealous. You attract me, dears, a lot. I could be happy with you if I had the necklace. That's my price. Bring me the necklace, and you need never have any jealousies of any other man.
Captain Morgan, I beg of you, please go back to the ship and put that necklet in some safe hiding place.
So it is careful you are over my health, is it?
100 men tonight wanted to get their hands on it. And you're fool enough to roam this part of Port Royal at night alone. Next time, mayhap, I'll not be about when you're set upon.
Relieve me temporarily of the necklet. Here, take it. Take it back to my ship, the Flying Gull.
Captain Morgan, you trust me enough to give me the necklet with instructions to take it back to your ship?
Aye, Hunter, that's what I said. I trust as a reward for the service you did me tonight. Wait aboard ship till I return. Here, take this ring. Show it to the man on watch, and he'll know that you've come from me. He'll take you to my quarters. Wait there until I return.
When will that be?
That I don't know. I have business to attend to, but I'll see you, Hunter, back aboard the Flying Gull.
So, you're back again, Morgan.
Yes, Sir Thomas. I must apologize for this late visit, but I was detained in town.
Your trip was successful.
Highly successful, Your Excellency.
I'm glad that you dallied before coming to see me. While you're away, things have changed, Morgan. Changed considerably.
What mean you?
I have received from England documents set with the Royal Seal. Documents which came directly to me as the Thomas Notford, Governor of Jamaica. Not to the Assembly.
And these documents contain what, Sir Thomas?
Spain has protested to England against men of your type. England is beginning to frown on buccaneers. I've been asked to see that it's stopped.
Oh.
No laughing matter, Morgan. No laughing matter at all.
I know it is a serious matter. It was not that I was laughing at. It was that you should be ordered to stamp out this notorious practice.
I am here to carry out the King's wishes.
Publicly, you old rogue, but not on the sly. Publicly, you must condemn me. But privately, you give me welcome when I return from my trips. That's how it is it not?
Aye, that's how it is, Morgan. But I have a solution.
Good. Let me hear it.
An admiral could not be a buccaneer, could he?
Aye, St. David. Is that what you have in mind?
You line my pockets well, Morgan. I seek not to lose that which you put into my coffers. But I must obey the King's instructions. You understand that? As governor of Jamaican waters, I will give you a cloak of respectability. And the moment you sail into Port Royal, you will become my vice admiral. What you do beyond Jamaican waters, of course, is beyond my control.
You sly fox. And what of the other buccaneers?
Those who don't join your fleet will be hunted down and wiped out.
Oh, so that's what it is, is it? You're giving me a license. You're granting me a license to become the chief buccaneer of the Caribbean.
Oh, no. I am creating you vice admiral with the power to find your own fleet. Your main task will be to drive the other buccaneers off the seas. Of course, what you do beyond the seas of Jamaica is entirely your own business. For creating this position for you, I naturally require recompense.
And recompense you shall have, man.
Well, you'd better see I get it, Morgan, because I am supreme on this island. My word is law. I hold your destiny in my hands. Oh, that reminds me. I received another mail on the last packet that arrived. Can you set sail almost immediately?
Aye. For what reason?
The ship called the Elizabeth Ann is due in any day now. I want you to go and meet her. Give her protection and bring her safely back to Port Royal.
For what reason?
Oh, there's a kinswoman of mine aboard her. Antoinette de Lacy. She's French and a distant relation, you know. Her parents have died and she's coming to join me here in Jamaica. So I'd like you to meet Elizabeth Ann and bring her safely to Port Royal.
You're sure that that is the reason? You're not sending me out to a trap, are you?
A trap? Oh, why should I when you lie in my pockets and I've just made you vice admiral?
That office might have been created to throw dust in my eyes. You might fear me and wish to lull my senses with false promises and have me sail into a trap.
But why?
Because the king's told you to be rid of buccaneers and you fear me. I don't trust you, Sir Thomas Mutford, governor of Jamaica. I know you for what you are. I'll meet your vessel, but I'll be well prepared.
This is all unnecessary.
No, it is unnecessary, think ye? I know, Sir Thomas, that you'd sell me into trouble if you thought it was to your advantage.
When I heard you wanted to see me, Cortez, I could not believe my ears. After giving you another ship, don't tell me you have failed me a second time.
No, Your Excellency, Don Pietro. I have come to tell you that I have redeemed myself.
Redeemed yourself? Cortez, what do you mean?
2 days out from Cuba, I sighted a ship. I recognized her as British. I engaged her in combat. And I have captured her. Spain is avenged for the loss of my other ship.
Indeed? Is that so?
Yes.
And did this British ship carry as much treasure as the ship you lost? Has that been replaced? I ask you, Cortez, have you replaced the fabulous Aztec necklace?
Their cargo, senor, was mainly silks and other goods sent for trade in Jamaica.
A mere pettiness to the cargo you lost. Was she carrying passengers?
Quite a number.
We will send them and the crew to the slave markets. They will at least bring back some small return. But when I think of the loss of the Aztec necklace, I feel bitter about the whole thing. And you come prattling about the price you have taken.
Mayhap, Your Excellency, there is something of great value aboard the ship.
Well, what is it?
I discovered amongst the passengers of the Elizabeth Ann a girl, very beautiful.
And she will fetch a good price.
Don Pietro, you mistake my meaning. You will see for yourself. She is not English. She is French. Her name is Antoinette de Lacy. And she is a kinswoman of Sir Thomas Mutford, the governor of Jamaica. She was sailing to Port Royal to join him.
So, this is interesting. You have kept the woman safe?
When you see her, you will understand it was with difficulty. But I succeeded. I took the liberty of bringing her with me here into your home. She waits outside in the anteroom now. She speaks quite fluent Spanish.
Bring her in.
Bring that woman in here.
Oh, dear. Senor, please. Please help me. Don't harm me, please, I beg of you.
Senorita, there is no need for you to be afraid.
Please don't send me to the slave market. I beg, I beseech you.
It would seem, Cortez, that Mademoiselle de Lacy thinks we ill-treat women. You need have no fear, Senorita. You shall be taken care of, looked after.
Did I hear you ring, Father?
Mademoiselle Antoinette de Lacy, I want you to meet my daughter, Dolores. Dolores, take the mademoiselle. She will tell you all about herself. Treat her like an honored guest. I will see you in a very short while, just when I finish speaking with Cortes.
Si, Father.
Come with me.
Oh, you are right, Cote. You have brought me a treasure. The kinswoman of Sir Thomas Mutford. I know Sir Thomas works hand in glove with that pirate Henry Morgan. So, in exchange for Morgan, Sir Thomas will have returned to him his kinswoman, Mademoiselle de Lacy. Messages must be sent to him immediately, at once. Well, Dolores, what do you think of our guest?
Father, have you sent messages yet to Sir Thomas Mutford?
No, child, not until tomorrow.
Then, Father, do not send them.
Huh? Why not?
I have been talking to Mademoiselle de Lacy, asking her about herself.
Well?
She has never seen Sir Thomas Mutford. He has never seen her. As you know, I speak French and English very well.
See, but where is this leading to, Dolores?
My Aztec necklace went to Jamaica. I want it back. Now is the chance to get it back myself and to trap Henry Morgan at the same time. I will go to Jamaica masquerading as Antoinette de Lacy.
How will fare this beautiful Spanish spy on the island of Jamaica? Listen to the next episode of Afloat with Henry Morgan. Afloat with Henry Morgan. Sir Thomas Mutford, governor of Jamaica, has received instructions from England to put down the Caribbean's buccaneers. As he shares part of Henry Morgan's loot, he looks upon this order with disfavor. So he creates Morgan vice-admiral, with permission to sail as he pleases beyond the shores of Jamaica. One of Spain's ships captures a British merchantman, upon which is traveling Antoinette de Lacy, a kinswoman of Sir Thomas Mutford. Dolores Pizarro, daughter of the Cuban governor Don Pietro, learns that Sir Thomas has never seen Antoinette. So she proposes to her father that she go to Jamaica posing as Antoinette and there lay plans to trap Morgan and also get back her lost fabulous Aztec necklace.
What is this you say, my child? You go to Jamaica, to Port Royal? It is impossible.
No, father. It will be living better than rotting my soul away here in Cuba, attending the dull social rounds of the Havana Society.
The way I have arranged things will bring about Morgan's capture. This girl, she is a kinswoman of Sir Thomas Mutford. Although Sir Thomas works hand in glove with Morgan, blood must be thicker than mere business. He knows the fate Antoinette would suffer. Do you think he'll willingly see his own flesh and blood go through that when he can save her by betraying Morgan?
And does that get my Aztec necklace back?
It is gone. It is gone. It is silly to even think about it now.
No, it isn't. It is in Jamaica, and I am going to get it back. Listen, Pop. We cannot fail. Sir Thomas has never seen Antoinette de Lacy. All he knows is that she is a kinswoman of his and has come from France. I speak French and English, remember?
No. We will do it my way.
Listen, Father. Sir Thomas Mutford is no fool. Henry Morgan fills his pocket. He is going to hate seeing Morgan go. Sir Thomas Mutford is a clever man. He might trick us so that his kinswoman is returned to him and Morgan goes free. But if I go to Jamaica as the governor's kinswoman, I will mix with the cream of society. I will learn all Morgan's plots, his plans. I will make Morgan my friend.
Even so, how will you, a mere woman, throw him into a Spanish trap?
I have thought of everything. Keep Cortez here in Cuba. Every so often, under cover of night, he approaches the Jamaica shore in a small sloop. I will meet him and tell him what I know of Morgan's plans. When I have finally laid my plans and incidentally got back my necklace,
I will leave with Cortez and return knowing what Morgan plans to do. We could easily catch him.
Your plans are reasonable, but there are many pitfalls. We do not know how much Sir Thomas Mudford knows of Antoinette Delacy's family. He might trip you up at the very beginning by asking a simple question about family of whom you know nothing, but of whom you should know.
Then we will question Antoinette. She will have to tell us of her life for as long as she can remember.
She might guess our purpose and mislead us.
We will have to take that risk.
No, we will not take any risk. Give her to the Inquisition to question. She is a woman, and under torture she will be only too willing to tell us the truth.
Is that necessary, Father? She is a woman.
Your safety, Dolores, is at stake. Your very life is in danger. It is necessary. You will hear what she has to say.
No. No, I couldn't do that. You have the Inquisition take down her story, and I will learn it by heart.
So, if I consent, how will you get to Jamaica?
I have thought of that, too. Cortez captured the ship. Aboard her is bound to be a longboat. I will sail with Cortez under cover of night almost to the shores of Jamaica, when I will set out in the longboat and make my own way to Port Royal.
And there you will tell them that you managed to escape from the Elizabeth Ann and have only just managed to reach the island.
And why should they doubt my story? The governor will know that Antoinette de Lacy was aboard the Elizabeth Ann. He will know by then that it has been captured by a Spanish ship. I arrive in one of the Elizabeth Ann's boats, saying I just managed to escape in the confusion. Wherein will he question my story?
It depends on one thing, Dolores, and I ask you to abide by my decision.
You do not say definitely that I cannot go.
At the moment, no. But my final decision rests on how much we learn from Antoinette's story. It depends on how much information she gives us, which will allow me to believe that you could get away with this masquerade. If you go, it will be because I would dearly love to lay hands on Henry Morgan.
Oh, Hunter, you found the Flying Gull?
Yes, Captain. It was not difficult to find. It must be the best-known ship in Port Royal.
I've been paying my respects to the governor, Sir Thomas Mudford. Know you him?
I have heard of him.
From your tone, I gather it doesn't please you. Don't blame you either, my lad. Don't trust him myself. But I must say that he's in the past given me his protection, and that is something I've needed.
And for that protection, he no doubt collects part of your gains.
Say it, lad. Loot. Loot's the word. Say it. Aye, he does. But tonight he told me of trouble.
Trouble?
Aye, Hunter. It would seem that England has been listening to the whining Spanish. They've gone on their knees to our illustrious Charles II, begging him to sweep the seas of the buccaneers. And he, poor fool, is listening to them. Buccaneers are outlaws in Jamaica, Hunter.
Then you must find other headquarters?
Now, that would not suit Sir Thomas Mudford. He'd lose too much. He's created me vice admiral. And all the buccaneers who care to join with me can come and form a fleet. Those who don't care to join are to be swept from the seas. I'll have to take certain instructions from the governor. Curse it, as I trust him not. You know, Hunter, if he had to choose between trouble and me, I'd be the one to be sacrificed.
Then you had best walk warily with his excellency.
Life's a thing that quickly changes. This very night I berth in Port Royal, and I leave to call upon his excellency. I'm set upon by two assassins. And you come into my life to save it. I offer you a berth upon a buccaneer ship, and you accept it. And once more the wheel of fortune turns. And instead of being aboard a buccaneer ship, you're now serving under a vice admiral. But we've wasted enough time in talking. I have an order for you, Hunter.
Aye, Captain.
I want you to round up my crew. We sail as soon as possible. There is a British merchantman expected in. We must go and see her and give her safe conduct to Port Royal. The first time I've ever done any legitimate sailing in my life.
Aye, Captain. Where do you advise me to look for the crew?
They're easy enough to find. They'll still be at the place we were earlier this night, the Dolphin Tavern. And hurry, lad. Step lively.
Aye, Captain. I'll have them back aboard in a short time.
A warning before you go. Watch out for Diaz. He's been my right-hand man until now, but I trust him not. Methinks you might be taking his place. You watch him. Watch him carefully.
That's enough, Jorge Diaz. I must be getting back now to attend to the others.
There is no need to do that. You want to leave me now? Ah, oh, you know they are too drunk to want any more liquor. They could not drink any more. And don't you want to stay here with the arts any longer, eh?
Let go of me, dears, or I shall be angry.
All members of the Morgan, throw back the flying galloper. Be quick about it, you. No insubordination now. Order again, Molly.
Who is that giving orders in Morgan's name? Ah. Oh. Why, it is the fair scoundrel that was here earlier in the night.
Away, my dear. Collect the flying galloper at once.
And who are you to think you can give me the orders?
They're not my orders. They're Captain Morgan. Get moving.
You think I take orders from you? I am the one who gets the orders.
You scum, you'll do as I tell you. Get back to the ship. We're sailing soon.
I'll fix you, you ox.
Look out, he has a knife.
Try that, mate, would you?
A hard fist smashes down on Diaz. His body arches. His feet leave the ground. There is a splintering of smashing wood as his body hits a rickety table and lies limply amongst the wreckage. The blade of his knife gleams white on a dirty floor. In the taproom, the sound of talking goes on unceasingly. Most of the customers are too full of rum to investigate, and in any case, the sound of violence is only too common in their ears. On the impact, Kitty's slender hand goes to her mouth to stifle the involuntary cry. Her eyes are fixed on the limp form.
Have you killed him?
He will live to hang yet.
Without a look at her, Jeffrey crosses to pick up the unconscious man.
So, I was right in what I thought about you.
With a gentle gesture, in which there is a certain firmness, Kitty lays her hand on the sleeve of Jeffrey's shirt. Her pressure sends vibrations up his arm, causing a shock of sudden excitement to his heart. He slowly turns to look at her.
I knew the breadth of your shoulders would better cover your
strength. As she speaks, her eyes look up into his and hold them in her gaze. Slightly, she leans her body towards him. Excitement makes his breath come in short, deep gasps. The noise of the tavern fades from his ears. All his vision can see is Kitty. Kitty, whose eyes are two deep gray pools in which are mirrored longing and a strange, exciting emotion. It is a long, long time since a woman has been in this way so near to him. Her lips, moist and near and invitingly red, are gently parted. An unbreakable, invisible bond forces his head nearer. Her long lashes are lowered and sweep her cheek. Music crashes in his ears. Her lips are sweet and thirsty on his. Her arms climb warmly round his shoulders. And suddenly the music stops. He hears the noise of the tavern, the disorder of the room, the cheapness of the woman. And repulsion sweeps over him. Roughly he pushes her from him. Contemptuously wipes his mouth with the back of his hand, bends down and picks up the unconscious Dietz, throws him across his shoulders. Without a word or a look at Kitty, stalks out and through the tap room. Kitty watches him go. The corners of her pretty mouth turn down.
So, I'm good enough for you, stuck-up pig. You spurn me when I offer you what other men I'd kill for. All right, Mr. Hunter. The time will come when I'll have you crawling at my feet, begging from me the smallest favors. And I'll laugh at you. I'll laugh at you and spit in your face.
A woman, warm and generous, pours forth the hates of hell. Listen for the sequence of this hate in the next episode of Afloat with Henry Morgan.